Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Despite opponent concerns, the Florida Senate passes a controversial bill requiring minors to have pre-abortion parental consent.
I did not want to tell my mother that I was pregnant. Probably the hardest conversation I've ever had with anybody in my life.
Also tonight, the Florida House and Senate have released their budget plans, and after years of not receiving a pay raise, it looks like state workers may finally get one.
People have said we need to run government like a business. I agree with that. We should. State government is a business. But those businesses out there that are successful take care of their employees.
We'll also find out about a plan that could mean higher taxes for folks in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. It's day four of week four in the 2020 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The much-debated measure requiring minors to have parental consent before obtaining abortions cleared a major legislative hurdle today. Ryan Daly has that story.
You don't want to tell your parents. I've been there. I know. I did not want to tell my mother that I was pregnant. Probably the hardest conversation I've ever had with anybody in my life. But I'm so glad I did.
Republican Senator Kelly Stargell was 17 when she found out she was pregnant. She told her colleagues her story when her mother pushed for her to get an abortion, but she ultimately decided to have the child. Her proposal passed on a party line vote, and during the hour and 15 minutes it was debated, it got fierce pushback from Senate Democrats. This came from Plantation Senator Lauren Book.
I don't believe that the state of Florida should be forcing children to have children. We should not go against the advice of every single leading medical organization in the U.S. We should not punish doctors for listening to and acting out in the best interest of their patients.
The measure would make it a third-degree felony for a doctor to perform an abortion on a minor who didn't get consent. It also stiffens the penalty for doctors who violate a current law that says babies born alive during an attempted abortion must be taken straight to the hospital to get care, from a misdemeanor to a third-degree felony. Republicans pushed back on the idea of what constitutes acting in the best interest of children. Senator Aaron Bean came prepared with a list of other actions the legislature has taken requiring parental permission.
To get their ears pierced, to get a tattoo on your own, before they sit in a tanning booth, to purchase a gun.
Bean called into question what he sees as hypocrisy on that front.
But yet, in Florida now, middle schoolers, babies, can go make a life-altering decision.
Some Democrats, like Broward County's Gary Farmer, say legislation like Stargell's isn't needed.
In Florida, parents have the absolute right to be notified if their minor daughter is pregnant and seeking an abortion. So we do not have to pass this bill to ensure that parents are aware of a minor pregnancy.
Palm Beach Democrat Kevin Rader says many times parents get notified regardless.
When faced with an unplanned pregnancy, most young people voluntarily disclose it to a parent or trusted adult in the findings that I've looked up on the internet. They go to a family member or a teacher.
Others, like Democratic Senator Bill Montford, say not all parents are good parents, which is why he can't support a bill like Stargell's. Montford, a former school principal, says he saw many instances where students were too scared to tell their parents and feared for their future. Stargell acknowledged that piece of the debate.
And yes, I agree, this is for functional families.
But she says that's where a provision of her bill providing for minors to be able to petition courts to get around getting parental consent, dubbed a judicial bypass, comes into play.
This bill addresses concerns raised by the Supreme Court that a judicial waiver process must be available for minors under certain circumstances, such as when abused or when a waiver from a parental parental consent is the child's best interest.
Opponents say forcing a minor through the court system would only add to the trauma of an already difficult situation. The House is expected to pass the measure during a floor session, which could happen as early as next week. That would send the bill to the desk of Governor Ron DeSantis, who asked legislators to send him the measure during his State of the State address at the beginning of session. If signed into law, it's likely to get hashed out in the state Supreme Court. And it's been there before. In the late 1980s, Planned Parenthood, the American Civil Liberties Union, and other groups challenged a similar law. The state's highest court at the time decided it was unconstitutional. I'm Ryan Daly.
State workers in Florida have been calling for a pay raise for years. This week, the House and Senate released their plans to give them one. As Blaise Ganey reports, a union that represents the majority of state employees is applauding the move, but still wants more.
Here's House Appropriations Chair Representative Travis Cummings announcing his chamber's plan for state workers.
We've invested over $181 million for state employee raises, including $1,800 for any state workers making less than $50,000.
That plan would benefit the ones who may need it most, but leaves out anyone who makes above $50,000. The Senate plan goes further. Senate Appropriations Chair Rob Bradley explains.
The Senate budget includes a total of $249.4 million in new investments for our valued state employees. This includes an across-the-board raise of 3% for all state employees.
The Senate's plan also allows for a minimum increase of $1,000 if a 3% increase would fall below that. Vicki Hall heads the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees of Florida, or AFSCME.
We are extremely pleased that the House and the Senate budget have privatized a raise for our dedicated state workers.
Last month, AFSCME held a bargaining session with the state to try and get a pay raise for workers. The Public Employee Union wants a 5% across-the-board pay hike and a 2% cost-of-living adjustment.
We actually want this to continue to go forward, not just for this 1 year. And as you know, our state workers are the lowest paid in state employees in the nation.
North Florida Democratic Senator Bill Munford agrees the cost of living adjustment is needed.
If you look at the cost of living, for example, in the last 10 years, it's gone up. So if you took a snapshot 10 years ago, snapshot today, you'd be hard-pressed to try to tell somebody that state government is a good place to go to work.
Munford has been focusing on making sure state workers get paid as if they were in any other job sector.
As we often have said, people have said, we need to run government like a business. I agree with that. We should. State government is a business. But those businesses out there that are successful take care of their employees. I don't know any successful business who that let their employees go to work for 10 years with only one small pay increase.
Specifically, state workers haven't received an across-the-board pay raise since 2008. And Munford says since, employees are actually making less. He's carrying a bill to put a cost-of-living adjustment into law. It would authorize annual cost of living adjustments to base rates of pay for state employees who have achieved their required performance standard. The bill passed one committee and has two more stops. An identical bill in the House hasn't been heard. I'm Blaise Gaynor.
Still to come on Capitol Report, as the 2000 election proved, Florida sometimes has trouble with ballot recounts. Supporters say a bill now in the state legislature would improve things.
All it takes is one stray mark to spoil a paper ballot.
And some lawmakers are pushing back on a move to make it more difficult for citizens to change the state's constitution.
In the past 20 years, 57% of all constitutional amendments that have passed have been proposed by the legislature, only 24% by citizen initiative.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by Cloud Navigator, providing cloud computing services and creating secure and productive workplaces for businesses and government agencies. Cloud Navigator, a Microsoft Cloud Platform partner operating throughout the Southeast. On the web at cloudnav.com.
A proposal in the legislature could change how recounts are conducted in Florida. The measure hinges on an auditing system that at least one local supervisor says is better at accessing digital copies of paper ballots than what's currently being used. More on that from Robbie Gaffney.
When elections are close, voter ballots are recounted. first by machine, and if the results are still slim, by hand. It's a process Jacksonville Beach Republican Representative Cord Byrd remembers during the 2018 election. Byrd says he saw that election's recount in Duval County.
We're in a room and you've got dozens of people and tables spread around and tens of thousands of ballots out, and all it takes is one stray mark to spoil a paper ballot.
Now Byrd is backing a bill that would allow election staff to use an auditing system for both machine and manual recounts. Right now, for manual recounts, election staff have to sort through ballots by hand. Byrd says the technology he's proposing is already approved by the state.
Ballot images are always on a hardened closed network. That's called, what we call that is air gapping. And air gap ensures total isolation of a given system electromagnetically, electronically, and physically from other networks, especially those that are not secure.
Currently, voting systems can make digital copies of paper ballots, but Leon County's Supervisor of Elections, Mark Early, says those copies are hard to access and don't have any sorting capability. The auditing system Byrd wants the state to use keeps an inventory of all paper ballots. It makes them easier to find so staff can cross-check them with digital copies. Early says he's been working with the technology for 11 years.
From my perspective, this is a highly secure system. It's completely offline. It is air-gapped. There's no connectivity to the internet in any time. It's certified to the tabulation part of this is certified to the same rigorous standards that voting system is.
French Brown with advocacy group Verified Voting is concerned that election staff won't cross-check paper ballots with digital ones. Brown says checking the paper ballots should be a requirement in the bill.
Florida should stand strong behind its decision to trust in the paper and at least have some level of check when you're going to use these digital technology for a recount.
Brown wants election staff to take a sample size of paper ballots and verify the digital ones match up. Byrd said he's planning on changing his bill to include that requirement. If signed into law, the bill would take into effect July 1st. But Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections David Ramba says he doesn't expect counties to use the auditing machines in the November election.
This is just a start of the process. You still have to go through the rules and the certification. Even after that's done, the implementation and the rollout, most supervisors of elections would not dare try to do that during an election cycle.
Ramba says digital copies could serve as a more easily accessible backup if the original ones have been lost or destroyed. They could also be blown up on a screen to make them easier to see. One concern brought up by lawmakers is the cost of the auditing technology and whether counties would be able to pay for it. Currently, 9 counties use the system. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Across Florida, elderly residents are worried. Many seniors live on fixed incomes, and they rely on small monthly pensions and Social Security checks to make ends meet. So nothing grabs their attention like being hit in the pocketbook, especially if it's a new tax. Seniors are learning that the federal government could soon cost them money, and the Florida legislature could be dragged into the whole thing. Steve Bosquet has more.
The Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, is considering eliminating a current tax exemption for skilled nursing home beds in what are known as continuing care retirement communities, elder care centers where multiple services are offered on a single campus. No decisions have been made, but if the tax exemption is eliminated, it could have a $25 million impact in Florida. That's according to a statewide advocacy group known as FLICRA, or Florida Life Care Residents Association. The president of FLICRA is Diane Dalsimer. She lives in the John Knox Village complex in Pompano Beach, one of hundreds of 62 and over communities in Florida.
Now CMS, as a national agency, it's a government agency, has said that they're going to put a tax on providers of these health facilities around the country, including CCRCs, and it's a tax on the revenue. Now, the only revenue that CCRCs have is the money that's paid in by the residents who live here to make this their home.
Dalsimer says many older residents are not computer savvy and may not have internet access, so they're writing letters the old-fashioned way.
We have no idea how effective it will be, whether they'll listen to us, whether they'll understand, whether they have any sympathy for our situation. It's a serious issue for seniors. And you know, in order to live in a CCRC, you have to be 62 or older. So in many of these places, the average age is low 80s. My mother lives at John Knox Village. She's 102. I mean, talk about fixed income and eking out every penny. She's been here for 24 years. And we're very lucky she's here because she's cared for.
Senator Aaron Bean of Fernandina Beach, who chairs a budget panel on health and human services, called the Fed's idea, quote, a bummer. And he urged members of the Florida congressional delegation to strongly oppose the idea. Hopefully, Bean said, they'll fight for us.
Another statewide advocacy group, Leading Age Florida, said the rule change would have a, quote, devastating financial impact, with a potential of more than $25 million in new taxes on what are known as private pay senior citizen residents. Many of them have saved prudently to pay for their care, Leading Age said, but they're not necessarily wealthy. Leading Age said some private pay residents could actually outlive their assets and become eligible for Medicaid, thus increasing the Medicaid rolls and putting increased demands on taxpayers. Florida is one of 18 states that currently exempts nursing home and elder care facilities from these Medicaid taxes. The rule change under consideration is known as MFAR, M-F-A-R, or Medicaid Fiscal Accountability Regulation. If the federal government acts, the legislature would have to take state action within a year after federal implementation, which would likely be in the 2021 session. I'm Steve Bosquet.
Every day, water bottling companies extract more than 1 million gallons of water from Florida's natural springs. Some lawmakers and advocates say those companies aren't being held accountable for the water shortages they could cause. But Kayla Gallagher reports the companies and even some environmentalists say they're not the cause of the state's water woes.
Florida has the largest concentration of freshwater springs in the world, making it easy for companies to bottle the resource for sale. These companies, like Nestle Water Bottling and Seven Springs, want to extract more water. Democratic Senator Annette Tadeo says that this should come at a price.
Currently, our state imposes excise taxes on the extraction of oil, gas, phosphates, and other minerals. However, we do not impose such taxes on the extraction of our most valuable and precious resource, our water.
Tadeo's bill would put a 12.5 cents tax on the water that's extracted. The money would be put into a trust fund for local governments to use for quality improvements and water infrastructure projects. Republican Senator Joe Gruters is concerned the tax could be felt by the public.
The 12.5 cents would be a massive tax increase on the public and you know, I want to say that I can't tell you how much I appreciate you bringing this whole issue up. But at the end of the day, it's going to be very tough for us to move forward with any type of tax increase.
Gilchrist County houses a water bottling plant recently purchased by Nestle. The county springs are a major economic drive for the area. Gilchrist's Donna Kramer says legislation like Tadeo's could prevent Gilchrist from receiving test wells to evaluate the water quality. The county fears if Nestle has to pay more in taxes, there is a risk the wells will not be built, putting the cleanliness of the county springs on the back burner.
One of the legislation that they need to look at is our Nestle bottling water plant. We want that company to be successful, but there's legislation that wants to shut them down. And to ours, it would be very beneficial for the county because they would put test wells in. They will make sure the water is clean. If they're going to sell it, they're going to keep our water clean. And we really would like legislation to step up and let them do it.
Ultimately, Tadeo's bill was put on hold due to the likeliness of its failure. The senator is still planning on pushing the issue.
I believe that water is Florida's oil, is, you know, it's something that we're very proud of, but we got to make sure that it's clean, that it's not in any way. We know that there's a lot of contaminants and that we need to invest in protecting our water.
Tadeo is not alone in her desire to address problems with Florida's water consumption and quality. There have been multiple bills involving water bottling regulations and monitoring permits. Democratic Representative Anna Eskamani is a strong supporter of these efforts.
We have to make sure that corporations are not just pumping water without any type of thought to what that impact is on our greater ecosystem. especially when that water is then bottled up and profited from. And again, that water is being used in so many different types of beverages sold across the world at the cost of Floridians not having water in the future.
Water bottling companies pay a one-time permit fee of about $115 to $130 to pump water out of Florida's natural springs. After that, they don't have to pay anything else to extract. Escomani says water bottling companies shouldn't be treated differently from other companies that also extract water, like agriculture and wastewater management. Also in agreement is hydrogeologist and founder of Project Baseline, Todd Kincaid. He says that if you're going to tax one company, you have to tax all of them, and believes there should be a cap on groundwater consumption altogether.
My perspective is that when everybody gets worked up about bottled water, it distracts people and the discourse away from what really needs to happen, which is that the state needs to engage in real measures to constrain the amount of water that's pulled out of the aquifer.
Kincaid says water bottling companies take less than 1% of the water in the state's springs and aquifers. In a blog post about the issue, he wrote, quote, "If tomorrow the entire bottled water industry in Florida were to shut down, there would be effectively zero improvement at the springs in terms of either flows or quality." He says the bigger issue lies in the amount of pollutants going into groundwater. I'm Kayla Gallagher.
It's been almost 2 years since the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and in the Florida House, a bill calling for schools to have panic alarms in the event of an emergency is gaining support. Victoria Dominguez reports on what this bill could mean for schools.
The bill, referred to as Alyssa's Alert in honor of a Parkland victim, was recently heard in the House K-12 subcommittee. Representative Michael Gottlieb of South Florida is one of the bill's sponsors, and he says a system that notifies authorities of school emergencies is essential.
I received this text from my son, who's 16 years old. Under real code yellow, love you all. That's a situation that we face in schools today. And those kids have no way, other than getting that message to us, and those teachers have no way of disseminating information about a real emergency right now to our law enforcement. House Bill 23 allows a panic alarm to save the lives that might be affected.
Jeffrey Kelly is a director of business development for MutualLink, a technology company that created an alert for some schools in the state. He says versions of the alert are already in use and have been successful.
The technology that is being alluded to by Representative Gottlieb is deployed here in Florida in 12 counties, over 600 schools, with enormous success.
Kelly added the alert could be a panic button or an app for school employees and parents and could broadcast messages from a school's PA system.
When a panic button is pressed, instant notification of public safety, all other teachers and staff, and whoever needs to be in the know. We can integrate into radios, grab a video of what's going on, and even lock down a building.
Members of the committee asked questions about these alerts, including Representative Susan Valdez of Tampa, who asked how the alert could work for students with disabilities.
If you have a blind student or a deaf student, I don't know how this works with an app.
Kelly said the alert could change to accommodate those needs.
Us linking or integrating into a technology that gives a vibration or a flashing strobe is minimal effort on our part.
The technology for the panic alert is estimated to cost around $8 million. The committee voted unanimously in favor of the bill. I'm Victoria Dominguez.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, grassroots efforts to amend the Florida Constitution could get trickier under a bill that's on its way to the House floor, Regan McCarthy reports.
Citizens' initiatives are the main way regular people can make changes to the state's rules. Lisa Yerkin with the Florida League of Women Voters says that ability is an essential part of democracy.
The very foundation of our democracy is based on citizen initiatives. This bill is a blatant attempt to stop that. It creates undue burden upon the citizens to bring forth items that are important to them, to our community, and to our state.
But West Palm Beach Republican Representative Rick Roth says Florida's government is not a direct democracy. He responded to comments made by several members of the public during a recent committee meeting.
The citizens that spoke said clearly that constitutional amendments in Florida are being used to go around the legislative process because the legislature fails to bring up issues that we feel are important.
Roth says when lawmakers don't address certain issues, that doesn't mean they didn't hear the concerns from constituents. They just weren't interested. He says people shouldn't be allowed to route around the legislature.
Us not passing legislation that some people want because we are philosophically opposed to it doesn't mean that we're not doing our job. We're representing the people that elected us based on the principles that we talked about.
Tampa Republican Representative Jamie Grant's bill requires proposals to get 50% of the signatures they need to get on the ballot before the Supreme Court reviews the ballot language. The current threshold is 10%. It also asks the Supreme Court to give an opinion on whether the proposal, if passed, would meet constitutional muster.
Our process in the state of Florida actually allows you to put on the ballot a repeal of the First Amendment, and that our Supreme Court could do nothing about it until that repeal of the First Amendment, clearly unconstitutional, was passed by our voters.
Grant says his bill would also put more penalties in place if people who are gathering signatures for a proposal don't follow all the rules. And those signatures would expire more quickly under the measure.
We provide that a signature is valid until February 1 of next year. We require that the supervisor of elections charge actual costs. Many of you may not know this. But decades ago, we put into statute the cost that a supervisor would charge to review petitions. It has gone unchanged. It has not been adjusted. Another way of saying that is each of you are subsidizing at your local government, at the local government level, you are subsidizing every single constitutional amendment.
Riverview Democratic Representative Adam Hattersley says the changes will make it harder for citizens' initiatives to move forward.
Ultimately, what this bill is going to do is going to increase the cost for individuals and groups to get one of these constitutional amendments on the ballot. It's going to reduce the timeline that they have to do it. It's going to reduce the ability to correct mid-effort to do that.
Hattersley says it's already much more rare for citizens' initiatives to get on the ballot than proposals put forward by lawmakers.
One gentleman mentioned that our Constitution is one of the easiest to amend. It's actually incorrect. We're one of the top four most difficult in the country to amend unless you are a member of this body. In the past 20 years, 57% of all constitutional amendments that have passed have been proposed by the legislature, only 24% by citizen initiative.
The measure is heading for the House floor. Meanwhile, in the Senate, President Bill Galvano says he thinks some of the provisions make sense and match up with his chamber's priorities.
The intent, though, is in what, as I understand and what and that I support, is that we just don't have these ongoing open-ended amendment discussions when, in fact, voters change, populations change, and you get through a long legal process and maybe the people who put it in play in the first place may have changed their minds.
A Senate bill moving through the process would also prevent signatures from being carried over from one election year to the next. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Victoria Dominguez, Kayla Gallagher, and Steve Bosquet. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org.